Hello, listeners, and welcome to this edition of 9/11 Wake Up Call. I'm Cheryl.
In May of 2018, Richard Gage, founder of Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth, and Barbara Honegger, a 9/11 researcher and former government employee, were invited to speak in Europe. Today you're going to hear a condensed version, due to time constraints, of Barbara Honegger speaking in Brussels, Belgium, on May 14th. So here she is being introduced by Richard Gage.
Good afternoon, everybody. I'm Richard Gage, AIA, 30-year architect, member of the American Institute of Architects, and founder of the nonprofit organization Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth. I'm joined by my colleague Barbara Honegger, board member of the Lawyers Committee for 9/11 Inquiry, former White House official and Department of Defense senior military affairs journalist, who will be speaking in just a moment. We're here today to obtain 9/11 justice, every nation, every citizen, on behalf of the victims and family members of 9/11 terrorist attacks in every country. Europe lost 122 on 9/11 and thousands of soldiers in the 9/11 wars that followed. AE 9/11 Truth now represents nearly 3,000 architects and engineers, collectively more than 30,000 years of building and technical experience, who have signed our petition demanding a new investigation of the destruction of all three World Trade Center skyscrapers on 9/11. Barbara Honegger will now address the critical relevance to Europe for the recent historic filing of the 9/11 grand jury petition for a real investigation of the World Trade Center events on 9/11.
Thank you so much for everyone being here. We have a very serious reason for being here in the heart of NATO and the heart of the European Union. I am a board member of a relatively new organization called the Lawyers Committee for 9/11 Inquiry. We are a nonprofit 501c3 organization. We have around 35 attorneys, very dedicated attorneys, including whistleblower attorneys who have been very successful in whistleblower cases in the United States, and attorneys from all kinds of law practice. There are a number of us in the attorneys group that are professional researchers, and I am one of them. I am also I've been a senior military affairs journalist for the United States Department of Defense. And therefore, it's that expertise that I bring to the Lawyers Committee for 9/11 Inquiry. And for the last 2 years, approximately, I was also on the petition, the grand jury petition. That's what we're going to be talking about today. I will. The grand jury petition that was just recently filed on April 10th with the U.S. Attorney for the Southern District of New York. And I'm going to be getting into more of the details of that in a moment, because it is truly a historic event. The Lawyers Committee, we have one major purpose, and that is to identify the real perpetrators of the attacks of 9/11, because the 9/11 Truth Movement, myself and Richard Gage and others who have been in this movement as serious forensic researchers for over a decade, we have proven that the official story of who attacked our country, the United States, is not true. And therefore, we are here in the heart of NATO to strengthen NATO, because the very first invocation, the first evoking of the Article 5, mutual defense article of the NATO treaty, was based upon the official narrative of who attacked our country on 9/11. And because it is a lie, and because people around the world, there is growing awareness that it is a lie, we do not want NATO to be weakened because of it. People need to know the truth, but we need to reestablish our Atlantic Alliance based upon the facts and not upon the lie of who attacked our country. So, what's on the screen now is the logo for the Lawyers Committee for 9/11 Inquiry, of which I'm a board member, and was on the grand jury petition drafting committee. So I'm going to briefly go over the historical context for this official filing that was on April 10th of the 9/11 grand jury petition by the Lawyers Committee. And the focus is on World Trade Centers 1, 2, and 7, what really happened on 9/11 at the World Trade Center complex. We filed it with the U.S. Attorney for the Southern District of New York. And the reason for that is the federal court jurisdiction for the World Trade Center complex in Lower Manhattan. So I'm now going to briefly review the official U.S. government and NATO actions in the immediate wake of 9/11 to give the historical context for our grand jury petition filing just about a month ago. So the first and to date only invoking of Article 5, the mutual defense article of the NATO treaty, was literally a few days after the 9/11 attacks. And as I mentioned, it's based upon the official false narrative of who attacked our country. We will be getting into the proof that that narrative is false. And as you may know, almost exactly a year ago, believe it or not, the Secretary General, Mr. Stoltenberg, of the NATO, and our President, President Donald Trump, held a inaugural ceremony of this memorial. It is officially called the 9/11 and Article 5 Memorial. It is on the grounds of the plaza at the new NATO headquarters here in Brussels, Belgium. And on this memorial is an actual piece of the steel from the World Trade Center. And Richard Gage is going to be addressing why the official story of what happened at the World Trade Center is false. Many people don't know. Most people believe that almost every one of the nearly 3,000 victims of the 9/11 attacks in the four separate attacks, together both in the planes and in the buildings, most people believe that all or almost all were American citizens. That is true. However, there were citizens also from all of these countries across the world, most of whom died at the World Trade Center. These are all of the non-US 9/11 victims, 372. There were 122, as Richard mentioned, European victims alone. In the United States, in the immediate wake of 9/11, as I recall, on the 14th of September, only 3 days afterwards, the United States Congress, based upon the assurance, based upon the Bush-Cheney administration's assurance that their narrative of who attacked our country on 9/11, allegedly bin Laden as a mastermind, and 19 alleged hijackers who were on the four alleged planes that allegedly hit the buildings or crashed in Shanksville, Pennsylvania. Based upon that narrative, only days after 9/11, the U.S. Congress was pressured into passing what is called, it's a law, which is still on the books in the United States. It's called the Authorization for the Use of Military Force. And that is an acronym, an abbreviation, AUMF. The pretext, of course, was to retaliate against those our government, our executive branch, the presidency, claimed attacked our country. There were 2,977 victims, not counting the 19 alleged hijackers. And the authorization for military force also has very important clause. It says, or who harbored those who did attack the United States. And of course, that was the official narrative that was being put out by the Bush-Cheney administration only days after 9/11, immediately after, that it was the Taliban in Afghanistan that was harboring bin Laden, who in turn was the alleged mastermind of 9/11. The authorization for the use of military force must be renewed or amended by the act of Congress every 4 years, and it is actually up in the immediate future. To this day, while we're having this press conference here in Brussels, Belgium, on the 14th of May, 2018, to this very day, the authorization for the use of military force, the United States federal statute, federal law, based upon the official lie of who attacked our people on 9/11, is still the pretext over 17 years later for every one of the 9/11 wars. What do I mean by that? The wars that are based upon the lie of who attacked our country on 9/11. It's also the pretext for mass surveillance police state measures, not only across the United States, but also throughout the NATO nations. Just very briefly, the official 9/11 story, I just want to give you some of the burning data points of how we know it's a lie. That original story that was fed to the United States Congress within 3 days of 9/11, based upon which we are still perpetrating the 9/11 lies that are using the blood and treasure of the NATO nations, based upon a lie, was that 19 hijackers did the attacks on 4 planes. Of the 19 alleged hijackers, none were from Afghanistan. But the United States then attacked Afghanistan. It attacked Afghanistan based upon that clause in the AUMF that we can also attack a country that harbored someone who actually did the attacks, and that was allegedly Afghanistan. And that was based upon bin Laden being in Afghanistan at the time. However, I don't know if you're aware of this, but our own Federal Bureau of Investigation, the FBI, officially has determined that bin Laden was never officially wanted for the attacks of 9/11, and the chief investigative spokesperson for the FBI stated publicly, it's on the internet, on YouTube, that the FBI did not have any hard evidence that bin Laden was involved in the 9/11 plot at all. 0 of the alleged 19 hijackers were from Iraq. The United States attacked Iraq. 15 of the alleged hijackers, even according to the official story, were from Saudi Arabia. United States not only did not attack Saudi Arabia, but for over 14 years until approximately 2 years ago, both Democratic and Republican administrations in the United States, over a total of 16 years, kept the significant Saudi links to the conspiracy to do the 9/11-like attacks hidden and classified in the final chapter of what is called the House and Senate Joint Intelligence Committee Investigative Report of 9/11. They're known as the 28 pages, and I will briefly be getting to those in a minute. So, the one country that had the most alleged hijackers, even according to the official story, which is a lie, it's provably a lie, we did not attack their country, but we attacked the two countries that had no alleged hijackers, Afghanistan and Iraq. 2 of the alleged hijackers, according to the official story, were from the United Arab Emirates. The United States government took no action against the UAE. 1 of them was allegedly from Lebanon. The United States took no action against Lebanon. And even the alleged lead hijacker, Mohammed Atta, who was from Egypt, the United States government took no action against Egypt. To justify invading Afghanistan, according to the actual text of the AUMF, President Bush determined, that is the word in the text of the law, determined that bin Laden was behind 9/11 and that Afghanistan, quote, harbored, unquote, him. But as I mentioned, we now know that bin Laden was never officially even wanted by the FBI on its official website. The director of the FBI, Richard Mueller, at the time of 9/11 and after for many years, publicly stated at a press conference at the Commonwealth Club in San Francisco, that videotape is on YouTube, he officially stated that there was no hard evidence linking bin Laden to the 9/11 plot. We also had 2, as you know, congressional and congressionally mandated investigations of 9/11. I've already mentioned the Joint House-Senate Intelligence Committee. Its main finding, which is also a lie, was that the 9/11 attacks could have been prevented except for the alleged failure of communication between 2 of our critical security agencies, the FBI and the CIA, the Federal Bureau of Investigation and the Central Intelligence Agency. This is a proven lie. It is a proven lie, and if you'd like to ask me in the Q's and A's how we know it's a lie so that I can keep this presentation shorter, I will tell you. So the Bush-Cheney administration, and then after that, for 2 entire terms of the Obama-Biden administrations, both Republican and Democratic administrations, classified and hid away and kept secret the final chapter of that Joint House and Senate Intelligence Committee investigation that we now call the 28 pages for short. Those 28 pages have absolute proof of the highest level Saudi government connections to the plot to do 9/11. However, the 9/11 Truth Movement has proven that the hijackers could not have actually done the attacks, and 15 of them are allegedly from Saudi Arabia. Nevertheless, they classified and hid away the report until about 2 years ago. Then, of course, everyone knows about the 9/11 Commission. However, the 9/11 Commission report is a complete and total lie. And even the co-chairs of the commission itself have said in their book called Without Precedent, quote, "We were set up to fail." One of the commission members, the original member, Senator Max Cleland of the United States, in disgust, he went on national television and resigned from the commission and called it a total sham and a cover-up. And the commission's own chief counsel said that the Defense Department, the Pentagon, and the FAA lied to the commission. It is based upon these official lie reports of the United States government in the Bush-Cheney administration that the entire 17 years of the 9/11 wars have been rolled out. The surveillance state and all of the blood and treasure of the United States and NATO countries in these 9/11 wars. Finally, as the context to the 9/11 attorneys group's recent action, there are the kangaroo courts, which are the military commission tribunals in Guantanamo, the military base in Guantanamo, Cuba. And there's also the Mousawi trial. You may remember that in the United States, there was the official stories that there were 19 hijackers, but there were supposed to be 20, and the 20th one didn't get on the planes. The original alleged 20th hijacker was Zacharias Mousawi, and he was arrested. He was the one person who couldn't have done the attacks of 9/11 because he was in a U.S. federal prison on 9/11. He had been arrested about 2 weeks before. In his trial, he was the one person who could not have done it. And just before 9/11, when he was in prison, they had taken his laptop. In his laptop was information that, according to the Bush-Cheney administration itself, could have prevented the attacks. However, the managers of the FBI office where he was, which was in Minnesota, as I recall, Minnesota, the FBI office in the state, asked FBI headquarters in Washington, D.C., 78 times in the 2 weeks before 9/11 to please let us look in his computer, and they were denied. FBI headquarters itself, including Robert Mueller, who became FBI director 5 to 7 days before 9/11, refused looking into Mousawi's, the so-called 20th hijacker's computer. The Guantanamo military tribunals are a complete and total sham. You may have heard of the alleged mastermind of the 9/11 attacks, Khalid Sheikh Mohammed. He's known in abbreviation as KSM. KSM and four other alleged masterminds of the attacks, conspirators, are known as the 9/11 Five. And for years, they have been in prison in Guantanamo, the military base. To this day, over 17 years later, they are still only in the so-called pre-trial phase. It has never even gone to a trial. Also, a very large percentage, between 25 and 40%, of the claims, the official claims, in the 9/11 Commission report, which itself is a sham, and said to be set up to fail by its own co-chairman, is based upon the confessions, the forced confessions of Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, who was waterboarded 183 times in 2 weeks. Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, only 3 days ago, asked the judge at Guantanamo if he could personally submit information to the U.S. Senate confirmation hearing on President Trump's nominee to be CIA Director Gina Haskell, who oversaw torture prisons. Khalid Sheikh Mohammed and the 9/11 Five almost certainly did in fact plan, that is, conspire on a 9/11-like plot before the attacks. However, amazingly, conspiracy charges are not allowed in military tribunals. Conspiracy is not a charge you can bring in a military court. And for that reason, in early January of 2013, the judge at Guantanamo in January of 2013 ruled that Khalid Sheikh Mohammed and the 9/11 Five, the conspiracy charges that the U.S. government had brought against them for allegedly doing the 9/11 attacks, planning them, had to be dropped. But because the 9/11 truth movement has proven they couldn't have actually planned the actual attacks that were done by others, because the real story of 9/11 is pre-placed explosives in both the World Trade Center towers and the Pentagon, therefore, there really is no charge that Khalid Sheikh Mohammed and the 9/11 Five in Guantanamo can be, no reasonable charge can be brought against them, because the conspiracy charges is all they did, they conspired. So there isn't any charge that could be successfully brought against them, i.e., the real reason why we still don't have a trial. Here's an article from February of this year, February 2018, quote from the New Yorker, "Are even the judges giving up on Guantanamo?" Quote, "When it comes to the Guantanamo military commissions, no one seems to know or rather agree on anything, not even who's in charge or how the proceedings work. And there are many such articles. The Guantanamo military tribunals are a complete mess and a total sham." Now we're going to what really matters. The 9/11 truth movement itself. Richard Gage and I are leaders of the 9/11 truth movement. What are the legal and congressional actions that we have already done? And then we're going to end with the important actions of the Lawyers Committee for 9/11 Inquiry. Many don't know, but Representative Cynthia McKinney, she was a representative in the US Congress, a Democrat from the state of Georgia. She put on two magnificent quasi-official hearings in an official House of Representatives hearing room in Congress. And she is a national hero for having done so. For having done so, she was railroaded out of office in the next election by the Israeli lobby in the United States. So finally, after 15 years, the 28 pages were finally declassified and released. The 28 pages, again, are the final chapter in the first of the two official U.S. government investigations of 9/11, and that was the House-Senate Joint Intelligence Committee investigation. I put investigation in quotes because it wasn't a true investigation. So the final chapter of that report, believe it or not, in September of 2016, just before the election, where Donald Trump won the election, there was a vote of the U.S. Congress, originally unanimous by both the House and the Senate, not a single vote against, to release the 28 pages. And this was over the vociferous, public, televised objection of the top spokespersons and officials for the entire national security state in both the United States, in Europe, and in Saudi Arabia. But they could not stand up against the facts that people like Richard and I have brought forward and have taken to open-minded and serious and courageous members of Congress who went to their colleagues, and the vote finally overrode Obama's veto, and the 28 pages were released. After the 28 pages were released, then, within a very short period of time, an extremely important U.S. federal statute, federal law, it's now federal law, was passed, called the Justice Against Sponsors of Terrorism Act. That was in September of 2016, just before the election. It's known as JASTA, J-A-S-T-A, as I mentioned, over the public outcry of the entire international security state and over Obama's veto, the only veto of Obama ever overridden in 8 years. And that's because no one can stand up against the facts, and no one can stand up against 6,000 9/11 victims, family members, and survivors. So, as soon as JASTA was passed in September of 2016, then the election happened. And in the last few months, Judge Daniels in the U.S. Federal Court for the Southern District of Manhattan, the same court, federal court, where we, the attorneys group, have just filed our grand jury petition, I'll be getting to that in a moment, the judge cited the newly passed law, the Justice Against Sponsors of Terrorism Act, to, for the first time in over 17 years, to allow the 9/11 victims' family case against Saudi Arabia for allegedly facilitating the 9/11 hijackers to move forward in the U.S. court. The tide has turned. Their discovery is going forward. And even though we in the 9/11 truth movement can prove that the hijackers didn't really do it that day, nevertheless, if Saudi Arabia defends itself in the courtroom, all they have to do is bring even one, let alone all six, of the alleged Saudi hijackers who allegedly died in the planes that day, who right after a day or two after 9/11 went public and said, "I'm still alive, here I am." All they have to do is bring even one, let alone six of them, into the courtroom in the ultimate Perry Mason moment, and worldwide the 9/11 truth will explode. I look forward to that. I hope Saudi Arabia does do that to defend themselves. And finally, there was the 9/11, you've heard of the 9/11 Victims Compensation Fund. That was mandated by an act of Congress. Over $7 billion, almost $7 billion, has been paid out to the family members, immediate family members, to the spouses, husbands, wives, parents, or children, and I believe also even brothers and sisters, of 9/11 victims, family members, either in the buildings or on the planes. But in order to receive the money, they had to agree, basically, to it was like hush money. They had to agree not to sue the airlines or the security company. All but one accepted the money. Now, what have we done in the 9/11 Truth Movement recently that really will make a difference? And why do we know that it will really make a difference? For not only publicly identifying the real perpetrators, but bringing them to justice. So what is the genesis of the Lawyers Committee for 9/11 Inquiry? It started with meetings in Rome. That's myself and Judge Ferdinando Impazamato. So over 2 years ago, myself and Jane Clark, who is the president of the Lawyers Committee for 9/11 Inquiry when we were in Rome, and Judge Impazamato, and a very famous U.S. attorney, Daniel Sheehan, met with Judge Impazamato in Rome. And the purpose was to try to find out what Europe could do, and to have his advice as to what we could do in the United States, and how we could work together to publicly identify the real perpetrators and bring them to justice, and what were the proper venues to do so. Then there was the 9/11 Justice in Focus Symposium in New York City in September of 2016. As you're looking at the photograph, is Judge Impazamato, who was the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court of Italy. And at the time, a couple of years ago, Judge Impazamato was the honorary president of the Supreme Court of Italy. And he has written two books on 9/11 truth. He's now deceased, unfortunately, recently, but he wrote two books on 9/11 that our Lawyers Committee is getting translated into English as I'm speaking to you. And in his books, he identified 9/11 as a U.S. Gladio operation. And then to the left of Danny Sheehan is a very important person in the attorneys group. That is Mick Harrison. He is the executive director, and he is also the director of litigation of the attorneys group, and he co-founded it with Jane Clark, with whom I went with attorney Daniel Sheehan to Rome to meet with Judge Impazamato. To his left, as you're looking at the photograph, is another attorney with the attorneys group, a very important person, and that is David Maischwinkel, who is an attorney in New Jersey. So on April 10th of this year, just about a month ago, there was an historic filing of a grand jury petition in New York City to the U.S. Attorney for the Southern District of New York, to the federal courthouse in the jurisdiction of the World Trade Center at Ground Zero by our Lawyers Committee for 9/11 Inquiry. You can read the petition by going to the Lawyers Committee for 9/11 Inquiry website, which is www.lcfor911.org. That's lcfor911.org. And you just click on read the petition and you will read what he's holding in his hand. Now the good news is, why do we know, not just believe, but why do we know we're going to succeed? We're going to succeed because by U.S. law, by federal statute, the U.S. attorney to whom we submitted the grand jury petition, which demands that he convene a special criminal grand jury to investigate, so that the grand jury members will then investigate what really happened at the World Trade Centers 1, 2, and 7 on 9/11, he must present our petition and our exhibits, our evidence, evidentiary exhibits, he must present them to the grand jury. He has no choice. It is non-discretionary under U.S. law. So if he doesn't do it, we will bring him to court under what's called a mandamus action, which means do your duty, and we will force him to do so.
And again, you were just listening to a speech given by Barbara Honegger on May 14th, 2018, in Brussels, Belgium, as part of a tour that she and Richard Gage did in Europe. To listen and watch the full video, you can go to YouTube and look for Barbara Honegger 2018, and the video should pop up. And Honegger is spelled H-O-N-E-G-G-E-R. This concludes this edition of 9/11 Wake Up Call. I'm Cheryl. Thanks for listening.